You're listening to the MLB At The Plate podcast. We're giving you the best content from each episode of MLB At The Plate. MLB At The Plate airs weekdays from 7 p.m. to midnight Eastern time on TuneIn.
Welcome into the MLB At The Plate podcast. Alongside Jeff Nelson, I'm Holden Kushner, and we're going to start the podcast out with the MLB At The Plate Triple Play, which is where Jeff and I discuss three topics that interest us. We're going to start the triple play out by discussing the Cubs' postseason outlook after losing pitcher Jake Arrieta to a hamstring injury. Jeff and I will then reset the AL and NL MVP conversations, focusing on Jose Ramirez, Giancarlo Stanton, and Paul Goldschmidt. We'll finish up the triple play by weighing in on the drama between the Yankees and Red Sox accusing each other of stealing signs electronically.
The MLB At The Plate Triple Play.
If you're the Cubs tonight, you want to see Hendricks start building it up a little bit and getting into at least the seventh inning. Get into the seventh inning tonight. Build it up.
Well, again, I mean, you look at their starting rotation. Are you happy with it? I don't think so.
Well, Arrieta got hurt. I'm scared as hell if I'm a Cubs fan. What happened to Arrieta? That hamstring that he pulled up with yesterday, that's code red, man.
I agree. You know, Lackey's not throwing well. Hendricks, like you mentioned, you know, Madden doesn't like his bullpen anyway, especially his middle relief. You're going to have Davis throw two innings? This guy's not a two-inning guy. You can't wear this guy out. He's not as young as Miller and also Chapman. I mean, you saw what it did for them. You know, Miller was outstanding, but, you know, Chapman paid for it, trying to use him multiple outs besides just three. You know, I'm a little alarmed. I mean, yeah, the Cubs are hot right now as far as everybody offensively. They're starting to kick it in. You know, you got Zobrist, you got Schwarber starting to kick it in. So guys are hitting the ball. But to me, you know, their rotation, like you mentioned, if Arrieta with the strained hamstring, yes, they have plenty of time and they're going to win this division as well. You know, they're 3.5 up from Milwaukee. I don't know if Milwaukee can take them. Maybe. I don't know. But I'm a little concerned about their rotation.
Well, if Arrieta's down, I have a hard time believing they're going to get through the NLDS. And that includes a Bryce Harper-less Nationals team that has never won a playoff series.
Well, if Arrieta's down, I mean, you're talking Milwaukee's 3.5 out. Do you think they have enough to maybe try to overtake them? They do see the Cubs.
You brought up the schedule issue, right? The Brewers got a tough one.
Tough schedule.
They
see the Cubs. Well, the thing of it is that now, you know, if you like the tough schedule that the Brewers have, then I think you can say, okay, yeah, they're going to earn their way. But they have the Cubs 7 times. After Cincinnati, they go there, and then they have them 4 times towards about the last homestand of the season. They have the Cubs. They could really, you know. You want to sweep, but 2 out of 3, gain a game here, you know, as hot as they are, you know, they can almost control their own destiny as far as trying to win this thing, win the Central.
I tell you, you go head-to-head with the Cubs without Arrieta, who, again, had a 1.59 ERA since the All-Star break heading into yesterday, and then he got beaten up a little bit before having to leave the game with the injury. But I just go back to the Brewers, and it comes down to the Brewers' offense. I'm sold on their starting pitching, the front of their starting pitching. I've completely come around on their bullpen, especially since the All-Star break ended. But, man, you know, for an offense that was the best in baseball or best in the National League through the first 2 months of the season, they've fallen off a cliff. And they just got guys that are not even making contact. Eric Thames is not the player he was in that first month of the season. Completely different player now.
Right.
Ryan Braun. You know, he's having a down year. His next home run, by the way, tonight he could hit his 300th career home run. So it'd be big for him. But it comes down to offense for me. And if they can go up against the Cubs, have to deal with Lester and Hendricks, and if there is no Arrieta, Lester, Hendricks, and then Quintana, who to me is the wild card in this whole thing.
They have it lined up. The Brewers have their rotation lined up for this weekend. They have Nelson going on Friday. They have Anderson on Saturday and Davies on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And the Cubs have no idea who they're starting Saturday and Sunday, and they have Lackey on Friday. So advantage as far as rotation-wise, even though it's in Chicago, has got to go to the Brewers.
Basically, the Brewers have to win 2 of 3 here, and then you pick up a game. If they can get to within 2.5 before then this week, get to within 2.5, maybe close to within 1.5 after that series, I'll start buying that. I think the better shot is catching the Rockies, whose starting pitching has just gone to hell. I mean, it's
it is.
The rookies
but, you know,
are running
team,
out of gas.
Yeah, as a team, you know, you're this close to the division. You have 25 games left, 24 games left. You know, you're 3.5 out. That's all your focus is on. And I know Craig Counsell is saying, hey, we're not focusing in on the wild card. If we focus in on the division, we can control. We have the Cubs 7 times. We can really make a dent in this. And yes, we have a tough schedule, but you know what? We don't worry about the Rockies. Let's worry about the Cubs. We're going to take them. We're going to win this division, and they're that close. It's not like the Diamondbacks, where hey, you know, we have no shot of winning this division. I don't care how poorly the Dodgers play the rest of the way. We're not winning this division. Let's just expand our lead and try to set up where we can have the luxury of trying to set up our rotation or the guy we want to start in that wild card game.
And the more that Cleveland wins, the more people take notice of Jose Ramirez. And the more that Jose Ramirez keeps hitting big home runs, the more that people are going to start talking about him for MVP. This is awesome. This is a great run that he's on, a great run that his team is on. And while Aaron Judge was the MVP of the first half, and Jose Altuve is probably in the lead right now, Jose Ramirez is just forcing me to throw him in the conversation. And hopefully the talk will get a little bit louder, because this was the MVP of the Indians last year. A lot of people didn't know about him. Just consistently good, played a lot of different positions. Now he knows he's getting run out there every single day. He has turned into a star. Lindor, Ramirez, Encarnacion. Star, star, star in that lineup.
Well, that's why I said their offense is so much better this year than it was last year. Ramirez, 25 home runs. You know, he's going to be in the conversation. I don't think there's any way that Altuve winds up losing this. This guy's leading the American League in hitting, .354. He's got over 20 homers. He's got 31 stolen bases. You know, he just does everything, you know, offensively, defensively. I know you have Springer. I know you have Correa having great years. But Altuve, this is his year. And, hey, good for Ramirez, because he's probably going to be the team MVP again. You know, but, you know, you have some very exciting players in the American League, and Ramirez is starting to come in. You know, you look what he did last year and look what he's doing this year. Great week last week. And, again, a great night tonight. But as far as anybody overtaking Altuve, you know, I think everybody's just playing for second right now.
Yep, but I think Ramirez has definitely put himself in that conversation.
Yeah. I agree with you.
Because it was, for a while, it was just Judge, and then it's Altuve and Judge, and then it's Altuve.
Yeah.
And now, you know, Ramirez, when it's all said and done, Ramirez might even finish second. But
you could be right.
Here's the thing about Judge. Here's what I like about Judge, though. Yesterday, he walked 4 times and singled.
Yeah.
And you get on base 5 times in a game, the guy that was swinging at pitches at his eyes, swinging at pitches an inch off the dirt on the outside part of the plate. Wow. For him to start showing a little bit of patience and then singling, maybe he's not hitting a home run every other game right now. But to me, yesterday getting on base 5 times was a huge step for Aaron Judge, and I hope he can build on that.
Yeah, because, you know, as much as this guy has struggled in the second half, a pitcher is always going to treat him as if I make a mistake, he's going to take me out of the park, and they're going to be extra careful. And, you know, I don't care how well he's swinging the bat, how poorly he's swinging the bat. You know, you look at last night, the 4 walks. You know, pitchers are afraid that if they make a mistake, he's going to make them pay, and he will. You hit that big home run, Sunday night against the Red Sox. You know, he's a streaky guy in the second half, and, you know, he's always a confident guy. He always has a smile on his face no matter how much he has struggled. You know, you saw Girardi bounce him around in that Red Sox series in the lineup. He hit him down like, 6th or 7th, and put him 2nd, then hit him 4th. So, you know, Girardi does a great job of trying to get his confidence back, but, you know, he's the rookie of the year as far as being an MVP. Maybe he was in the first half, but you look at what Altuve has done. And I might agree with you that Ramirez might wind up finishing second. You know, he's just on such a roll right now.
And it's not just that. His team has just been playing so well. I don't know how long Cleveland could keep this up during a regular season. All I know is that he has really been the catalyst behind it. If you would have asked me that they're going to win 12, 13 straight games, who's going to be the guy that was going to get hot? I would have said Encarnacion in all likelihood. But no, it's Encarnacion hitting the ball well. Lindor has gotten better as well. But it has been the Jose Ramirez show right now. And he is the hottest hitter in baseball.
You look at the MVPs, and And the National League maybe is a little bit more clear cut as far as, for me, I take a guy out of the lineup and where would that team be? You know, you take Aaron Judge out of the Yankee lineup. Are they a playoff team?
I don't know, maybe. I don't think so.
You take Altuve out of this lineup. Do the Astros have that good of a record? Probably not. Ramirez the same way. You take him out of the the Cleveland Indian lineup. Maybe they still win the division. I don't know. National League's a little easier because if you look at the favorites, you look at Stanton, you look at Goldschmidt. You take Goldschmidt out of that lineup, and I don't think the Arizona is even a playoff team at all. I think he may wind up being the favorite in the National League. But, I just you look at the guys around them. Yes, Altuve's got a lot of great guys around him. That lineup is stacked. But, still, the kind of year that he keeps putting up year after year, maybe this is it. Maybe this is his year. I think he's a favorite.
That's the other thing that I think is interesting when we're talking about MVPs, because that's what I hear a lot about. This is finally Altuve's year. This is Paul Goldschmidt's year. These are guys that are in the MVP race every single year, and finally this is their time.
Right.
If you take that out of it, I still think that they are the MVPs, but these are guys that have come very, very close multiple times, right? And now we're finally...
Yeah, it just seems like somebody inches them out. I mean, look at the Astros, they're not a playoff team every single year. And, for some reason, you have to be a playoff team in order for a guy to win the MVP. Stanton's having such an unbelievable year power-wise, 53 homers, over 100 RBIs. Everything that he's doing right now is a career high. Miami, you wouldn't even talk about them at all if it wasn't for Stanton. But Goldschmidt, you look at what he does for that team, average, home runs, RBIs, stolen bases as a first baseman. Like you said, they come up short because there's somebody that on a playoff team that has had a better year or maybe just as good a year. But you know what? Because they're a playoff team, they're going to wind up having the edge. Well, now the Arizona Diamondbacks are a playoff team, and now Goldschmidt's going to wind up being looked upon as more of an MVP type now than he's ever have. And I think the Altuve is the same way.
Yep, and there's a lot of guys that just go on war now. The new age voters that vote on wins above replacement, that's the main
thing. Which is ridiculous.
Well, again, I'm going to say that, and then Stanton leads on Baseball Reference, leads the way with a 6-6. Goldschmidt is close enough at 6.3 where I think they'd have a hard time giving it to Stanton over Goldschmidt. And Altuve leads the American League in war. I'm just telling you how it is. You can say it's ridiculous or it doesn't belong in a game or it doesn't belong in the voting. This is just where we are now. And I think Goldschmidt, who does deserve it, has carried his team and, by the way, took a cortisone shot in his right elbow. He's expected back Friday. Right. He will not be in tonight's game against the Dodgers. But Goldschmidt close enough there, and Altuve with the wins above replacement. And we know all the other things that go into this. We know the guys that are in the mix. Personally, I wouldn't even have Stanton in my top five. The Marlins, to me, forget about them. They were never seriously in the race. It's been about the Rockies and a couple of guys up there and Blackman and Arenado. I think those two guys, I think that Goldschmidt is your guy. Nobody's paying attention to Anthony Rendon with the Nationals. Bryce Harper was the guy before Rendon started taking over. So those guys, to me, are ahead of Giancarlo Stanton. Bottom line, right there. That's where I'm going. So, doesn't someone from the Dodgers have to be there?
If you have 53 homers, I got to think that, the last guy that did that was Prince Fielder back in 04 when he was with the Brewers.
And
the
impressive.
Last American National League guy that has hit 50 homers, and he had 50 on the nose. Mm-hmm. If Stanton gets to 62, and what's that, nine more, mm-hmm. if he gets to 62.
Still not my MVP.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's Goldschmidt. The guy's had a great year. I mean, he's the most outstanding player that I've seen this year. But it's not like where Mike Trout is so much better than everybody else by such a long, long margin. In the American League,
kid that killed him being out 2 months.
Well, this year, there'll be guys.
He may finish second anyway. I mean, look at him. He's going to get votes.
He is so much better than everybody else in baseball that when you're on a last place team, he's the one guy that can be the MVP. Now, the other side of things in the National League, I don't think that Giancarlo Stanton is that much better. At all, I don't think he's a better all-around player than Paul Goldschmidt. I don't think he's a better all-around player. I don't think he's a better all-around player than Nolan Arenado.
Oh, I agree with you. I agree with you because, you know, if you think about it, this is the one time that he's actually stayed healthy and he's been able to put up some big numbers. You know, I agree with you. I think Goldschmidt's a better all-around player. I would say Arenado is a better all-around player. But if you think about it, what Stanton is doing this year, you know, the Marlins, they were, I think, at the best, you know, they were a little bit over 500, and I think they were maybe 4.5 games out has been their best mark as far as being out of the wild card. They would be maybe a last place team if it wasn't for Stanton. You know, their starting rotation is not that great. Their bullpen's decent. They have a really good offense. With Stanton in that lineup, they have a really good offense. But without that power guy in that lineup, you know, maybe they're behind Atlanta and maybe behind the Mets, you know. But because of what Stanton has done, he's made Miami relevant. I mean, teams and media members and personalities talk about this team because of what he's done.
Yep, they talk about the man. They talk about Giancarlo Stanton. I went old school right there. Yeah. It is 1-0 Washington over Miami in the eighth inning. I do want to bring up one other name here. Corey Seager, who will not get votes. He's been on the DL for a little while now. Notice that the Dodgers have lost 9 of their last 10 ball games. Corey Seager has missed significant time recently. We haven't heard from him. Gosh, it's been over a week now that he's been out. He's targeting a return on Friday. And all this guy has done is been the quietest superstar in the game, 889 OPS. You know, he's slugging 500. He's getting on base at a 390 clip. He's hit 19 home runs. He just does everything well. And it's Bellinger that people are talking about MVP. Well, now that the Dodgers are going through a funk, where are they without Corey Seager? Because I've maintained this, that he's the guy. He's the most important guy offensively and in that lineup. Maybe not defensively, although he's good there, but he's the guy to me on the Dodgers that is the centerpiece of this offense. Bellinger has done remarkable things. Love the home runs, the big home runs. Seager really sets the table for that team.
No, I agree. You know, he in his second year, you know, 23 years old, you know, I agree. You know, he's such a mainstay in that lineup and he means so much to that lineup. You know, it is maybe one of the reasons why they're going down a little slump or a little bad road right now. But if you look at their season and especially their second half, you're like, okay, it's got to happen. They got to go through a little bump in the road. You look at Arizona and how well they've played. What they've 11 in a row that they have won. You know, it's got to happen at some point. And it just so happened it's coming to fruition for them now is that they're going through a little bad stretch. Their bullpen has not been that great of late. Diaz has struggled, or Baez has struggled just a little bit over his last couple outings. So it's going to happen. And like I mentioned earlier, I think this is a good thing. You know, they're not going to get the record, and I think they can put that out. They would have to have, what, 3 losses the rest of the year to even get 114, and they're going to get more than 3 losses. So they can put that out of their minds. They're not playing for that. But I think this losing stretch, this little bump in the road, is good for them.
Nelly, let's get into a story here, which is kind of interesting from my standpoint, is that the Red Sox allegedly – according to the Yankees, and they were confronted by Major League Baseball, were stealing signs from the New York Yankees via an Apple Watch. And for those of you that are technologically challenged, all an Apple Watch really does is anything. If you have an iPhone or something like that, you can break things down. You can look at video on your watch. You can look at a lot of different things. And apparently they were using instant replay cameras and Apple Watches to spy on the Yankees and break down the codes and exactly what pitches they were throwing to steal signs. I don't think it's illegal to steal signs. No one's ever been suspended for stealing signs. I think it might be illegal to use technology to do so. But then, in an act of gamesmanship, the Red Sox decided to tell the commissioner's office that the Yankees were doing the same thing to them. Yay, the Yankees-Red Sox rivalry is back thanks to technology. Yeah. All right, let's start here. Let's just start here. How prevalent is sign stealing in baseball?
Well, you know, when guys are on base, it happens, and that's just, you know, it's part of the game. You know, I've seen first base and third base coaches do it. When we used to play the Braves, both coaches used to look in and they used to try to get location from the catcher, and they would move up and back and forth in the coach's box. I remember Tino Martinez saying something, I think it might have been Pat Corrales or whatever, was the first base coach with Atlanta, saying, hey, you know, you got to knock that off, you know. And we also did it as well. I mean, we had Lee Mazzilli did the same thing, would get location. If the catcher wasn't smart enough and closing his legs and hiding the signs or hiding location and he was open, then, you know, you would have their location. Guys do it at second base. Not every hitter wants it, because sometimes the pitchers are, you know, don't have great command. And if you're looking out over the outside part of the plate and you're thinking, okay, here comes a fastball, next thing you know, they miss and you wind up on your back and your uniform's dirty, you don't want that sign from the guy at second base. And sometimes you just don't trust them anyway. I mean, you don't know if they got them. You know, that happens all the time. And if you have someone that is on the bases that is really good at stealing signs, you know, the advantage is going to go to the hitter, especially in location. You know, sometimes you get location, it's an outside part of the plate from the righty, then, hey, okay, I'm thinking breaking ball if he's going to go away. Now, as far as electronically, you know, now, you know, they have those little iPads that are in everybody's dugout now, little tablets or whatever they are. I don't think it has anything to do with the game. It's all about strategy or reports and where they move guys. But I've seen and heard of different parks doing things to try to steal signs or steal location. You have video guys everywhere on every single team, and you know, now even more because you have the instant replay that as soon as a play is close, they're on the phone, and you got a guy right in the back or right, you know, on the other side of the dugout, and he's telling you to challenge it or whatever. So I'm sure they can relay it quickly to the hitter or whatever. Now, when I was in 95, when I was in Seattle and we were playing the Cleveland Indians, we always thought, and it was around maybe the last few months of the season, that they had a camera out in center field, and you can see there's like three cameras, and it's not dead center because that wall, all of a sudden, that big tall wall that goes about, you know, almost center field down to left, there's three cameras right at the end, and one of them is an in-house camera. And I remember, you know, we played one game, and when you're pitching, the hitters didn't even seem like they were looking at you or staring at you. It looked like they were staring right through you or over your shoulder. So the next game, Lou Piniella had those cameras turned off, all the in-house cameras. We didn't know if, you know, we've heard some things. I heard that, you know, at Old Comiskey Park in Chicago, they used to use the scoreboard, and they used to have certain lights that would light up if a pitch was inside or outside, and the hitters could easily see it. You know, we even heard things where Barney Brewer or Billy Brewer, whatever the guy, the mascot for the Brewers at Old County Stadium, would do something if he had location. You know, it's just electronically, I don't think
Brewer?
It's legal.
Barney Brewer got in on that?
This is just devastating to my childhood.
We used to hear
all kinds of things that would happen. And if the Red Sox were stealing any kind of signs, then obviously it didn't work too well because they lost 3 out of 4 against the Yankees. And, you know, of course, you know, they come back and say, oh, there's a Yes Network camera that's also they're getting stuff from. Who knows? You know, I'm sure you can't say it doesn't happen. I'm sure it happens more so than teams find out. But you notice that the commissioner's in Boston, and he's going to talk to them about that, and they're going to have a little investigation. And, you know, on the field, stealing signs part of it. You know, electronically, you know, I don't know if it's illegal. I don't know what they're going to do about it.
I don't know how you stop it.
That's a little unethical.
I don't know how you stop it. Now, of course, Joe Girardi was asked by the Yankees media today if the Red Sox claims that the Yankees used a Yes camera to spy on the Red Sox, if it was true, and he goes, no chance. I'm just saying, no, we're not doing that. So, of course, the denial there from Girardi.
Well, the funny thing of it is I don't think Dombrowski for the Red Sox GM knows anything about it, and he may. But when John Farrell comes out and says, I don't know anything about it. If they're doing it, they're doing it on their own. The manager knows everything, that especially if signs are being stolen. You know, Chili Davis is a hitting instructor for the Red Sox. You know, I played, what a great teammate he was. He was one of my favorite teammates all time when we played together. I always loved facing him. Tough hitter, but a great teammate when we were teammates with New York. He was very good at picking up little tendencies from a pitcher as far as, you know, trying to see if they were tipping pitches. And I know he was probably just as good as that when he was on second base as far as figuring out, okay, hey, you know, this is what their signs are. This is what they're doing as far as pitches and location, and I'll help you out if you want it. He's very good at that stuff. Now, electronically, you know, who knows what they're doing. But as far as a manager saying, hey, I have no clue if these guys are doing it, yeah, right.
You're listening to the MLB At The Plate podcast, and we'll be right back with more after this. There's hits, and then there's all-time rock classics from the 60s and 70s. With classic rock hits on TuneIn, relive the very best sounds that defined an entire generation. If I ever get out of here, thought of giving it all away. Listen to the greatest rock songs in history with classic rock hits on TuneIn. This is the MLB At The Plate podcast. Here are your hosts, Holden Kushner and Jeff Nelson.
There were 14 games on Tuesday, and to bring you up to speed on all the action, we got the best day ever, Home Run Tracker, and statistically speaking.
Best day ever on MLB At The Plate.
Nelly, who's your pitcher tonight?
Well, I'm going to go with Marco Estrada. The game's still going on, Toronto and Boston, 2-2, but 7 innings, 3 runs, three hits, 0 runs, 3 walks, 3 strikeouts. He had about a mid-5 ERA, been struggling a little bit this year, a little bit inconsistent, but outstanding job against the Red Sox in Fenway.
I'm going to do something I've never done before for the doubleheader here on Best Day Ever. Best Day Ever pitcher, Ben Lively of the Philadelphia Phillies. Tonight goes 7 innings, gives up 1 run, strikes out 4, and in a game where Jacob DeGrom got torched, gave up 9 runs, 6 earned, and 3 2/3, Lively got the win. Ben Lively, best day ever on the mound. At the plate, Ben Lively, Philadelphia Phillies, 2-for-4, his second major league home run. He drove in 4 tonight.
Nice.
So how about this? Ben Lively, last 4 pitchers for the Phillies with 2 or more home runs in a season. Ben Lively, Cliff Lee, Randy Wolf, and Robert Person, who I don't even remember. He's up there with, how about Randy Wolf and Cliff Lee? And Lively is the first Phillies pitcher with 4 ribbies in a game since Cliff Lee back in 2013. Ben Lively, live it up, baby. Best day
that,
ever.
That may be
everywhere.
You know, out of the whole year, that may be the truest best day ever by a player. If you went back 5 years from now and ask him, hey, what was your best moment in baseball? He's going to come back to this one.
Yeah, it's when we were 53-84 and we beat the New York Mets after they had a fire sale.
Exactly, and he went deep.
How about your guy at the plate? Who is it?
I'm going to go to the Tigers. They beat up on the Royals. I'm going to go with John Hicks, first baseman for the Tigers. He went 3-for-4 with 4 RBIs. 2 bombs, number 5 and number 6 on the year.
All right, time now to track all the home runs from tonight.
MLB At The Plate Home Run Tracker.
All right, Jordan Luplow of the Pittsburgh Pirates blasted a 431-foot home run, 105 off the bat. Jacoby Jones of the Tigers had a pair. One went 375, one went 386. Mikey Matuk's home run went 412. Lucas Duda's blast went 410 feet, 107 miles an hour off the bat. 2 other hitters tonight with 107-mile-an-hour exit velocities, all tying for the hardest hit home runs. We'll get to them in just a few moments. Austin Jackson of the Indians blasted one 409. Jose Ramirez hit a pair of home runs. His second went 413 feet. Matt Davidson and Kendrys Morales, as well as Jose Iglesias, all going deep. Ben Lively's home run went 392. John Hicks, your boy John Hicks, 405 and 395. Hicks' first home run went 107 off the bat, his second 105. Lorenzo Cain, Daniel Murphy all going deep. Robbie Grossman of the Twins hit one 422 in a losing effort. Trevor Story in a winning effort, I would think, although right now that is up for grabs in Colorado. Wow, the Giants just came back, scored a pair of runs, so they're down 7-5 in the eighth now. But Trevor Story Blasted his home run 422 feet, 105 off the bat. Scooter Gennett, Travis Shaw, Jose Martinez all going deep. Manny Machado's home run went 425, 106 exit velocity. Harrison Bader, Darth Bader with a 399-foot shot for the Cardinals. Travis Wood, another pitcher going deep, 374. And Jonathan Scope's 31st home run of the year, another 107-mile-an-hour exit velo. It went 425 feet. So 431 from Jordan Luplow is the leader right now in the clubhouse for the longest home run of the night. Let's go a little deeper into the numbers.
Statistically speaking,
Lorenzo Cain of the Royals, his sixth inning home run was the 168th home run hit by the Royals this season, tying their franchise record at 168 back in 1987. You know what that tells me, Nelly? Again, they went out and they kind of transformed their offense from small ball to hitting some more home runs. And that, to me, was a big reason why things have not worked out for them. First thing is starting pitching, lack thereof. Second thing is this is not the same Royals offense we've seen in the past.
No, it's not. And you know what? They really were hot, and all of a sudden, you wonder if Dayton Moore was kicking himself just a little bit, saying maybe I should have pulled the trigger on some of these guys at the trade deadline, because now they're going to go into the winter with five free agents, and what are the odds of them signing any of them? Probably not, and you're not going to have anything to show for it.
All right, let's move on. As Jose Ramirez with two home runs tonight, right? Jose Ramirez with a pair of home runs. And what that means is that Ramirez has 10 extra base hits this month, and it is right now September 5th. That's a lot. 10 extra base hits in the month of September. Jose Ramirez, also the first Indians player with 25 homers and 45 doubles in a season since Grady Sizemore in 2006. Wow, I thought it was Manny Ramirez, but Sizemore had a big 2006. When Joe Mauer broke up Jake Odorizzi's no-hit bid tonight, he extended his hit streak to 14 games, the longest current stretch in the American League. Coming into his Astros debut, Justin Verlander had a 2.06 ERA since July 30th. That's fourth best in Major League Baseball in that span. Got a couple other Justin Verlander stats that I pulled and I put on my phone today. Here we go. Post All-Star games, he's got a 2.41, a 5-2 record, a 1.86 opponent average against, and 78 Ks in 67 and a third innings. And also, coming into tonight's start, he was 11 off of Luis Tiant's 2,384 strikeouts for the 13th most strikeouts in AL history. So when he picks up 11, he'll be tied with Luis Tiant for the 13th most Ks in the American League. And my sense is that he's just going to be up there maybe in top 13 all-time strikeouts. This is one of the great pitchers that we've seen in Justin Verlander, and a future Hall of Famer, and I feel like people don't talk about it enough with him. He's a future Hall of Famer.
He could be. You know, he could be.
Could be. This is what I hear with Verlander. How is it he's just a could be?
Well, let me – how many wins total does he have?
All right, first of all, let's – this whole wins thing, this is – it's a different time now. You don't have to have 300 wins, but he's got 183 wins and 114 losses.
He's got 183
he's
wins
gonna get
and he's
to
a
200.
Hall of Famer?
He's gonna
no
get,
way.
Yes. The wins don't matter.
Oh, he'll get,
at this
he'll
point.
Get to 200.
Yeah.
You know,
strikeouts,
he's got, 2373. He's got at least two more years.
So when he gets to 3,000 strikeouts, he's got to be in. He's at 2,373. He's probably getting to 3,000 strikeouts. He's a Cy Young Award winner and MVP, a Rookie of the Year, finished twice second in the Cy Young Award voting and third once. He should have won the Cy Young last year. He's an accomplished postseason pitcher. For me,
I mean, how many wins did Pedro have?
It's a good question. Let me look that up real quick. Gosh, the internet is awesome and scary all at the same time, isn't it? Pedro Martinez, 219 and 100.
Okay.
219 wins. I really don't think that wins are going to matter quite as much when it comes down to it. I'm just looking at, give me an 8-year span for a pitcher where he's up there among the handful of best pitchers in Major League Baseball.
Well, that's what they did with Pedro Martinez. You have 219 wins, and they said, okay, he was the best pitcher of his era.
He was.
Well, and Verlander was probably the same thing. So maybe he is. We'll see. Yeah. He's got at least two more years on his contract, maybe a third. It depends on if he finishes the top five in the Cy Young. His 2020 contract is vested. You know, this guy stays healthy. He's a workhorse. You know, he's one of the few that can go deep in the game and throw 115 pitches, 120 pitches. You don't find that anymore. So, you know, I'm not going to say no, he's not. You're putting together a good case, and I'm looking at the wins that Pedro Martinez and what everybody said about him. And Verlander is probably going to have better numbers than he is.
Led the AL in strikeouts 4 times so far. Yeah. I mean, he really is something spectacular. Adjusted ERA. I'm not going to get into all that other stuff with you. I'm just saying Justin Verlander by the eye test to me is a Hall of Famer, and there's no question about it. All right, a couple other things. With a win tonight, the Diamondbacks will tie their franchise record for consecutive wins set at 12 back in 2003. The thing that's going to hurt that is that Yasmani Grandal, as we're doing this show, just hit a home run, and the Diamondbacks and Dodgers are tied at 1. Since the beginning of 2016, Steven Strasburg's 5-0 with a 1.25 ERA and a .89 whip against the Miami Marlins. Not bad. He also threw a 26th consecutive scoreless inning, setting the Nationals record tonight. And in 9 starts since returning from the DL, Kyle Hendricks is a 2.36 ERA with 14 walks and 45 Ks and 53 1/3 innings pitch. So that's it for the MLB at the Plate podcast. Make sure to join us on MLB on TuneIn at 7 Eastern each weeknight for MLB at the Plate. During the daily 5-hour show, you'll not only hear all of what you heard on this podcast, you also have the chance to listen live to the games and get the action as it happens. For Ryan and Dustin in the LA studio and Jeff Nelson alongside me, I'm Holden Kushner, and we'll catch you mañana.
Thank you for listening to the MLB at the Plate podcast. Catch us every weeknight on TuneIn, where we take you around Major League Baseball with live listen-ins, analysis, player interviews, and much more. Plus, be sure to check out our other great content on TuneIn, featuring the very best in sports, music, news, and talk. On TuneIn, get caught up in the moment with more than 100,000 music stations and 5 million podcasts from around the world. Exclusive sports content, including live MLB, NFL, NBA, and NHL games, and 24/7 news coverage from CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News Radio. Tune in, your everything audio app.